You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. iiNet is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netbooks aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McCollum. Well, there are good sides and bad sides to social networking. And recently, the bad side has been making headlines with disturbing regularity. Some members of the community think that it's okay to vent on sites such as blogs and Facebook without any chance of being held accountable for their actions, or in this case, their words. Defamation is a false accusation or a malicious representation of someone's words or actions, something which is becoming extremely prevalent on today's social networking sites. The general law in Australia has divided defamation into two categories, libel and slander. Libel is the publication of defamatory matter in a permanent form, while slander is the publication of defamatory matter in non-permanent form. Something defamatory that is printed in a newspaper or book is libel, but the same thing, if spoken, is slander. Under the Broadcasting Act of 1992, the publication of defamatory matter over radio or television is deemed to be in permanent form and is therefore libel. Since the introduction of the Defamation Act of 2005 on the 1st of January 2006, the distinction between slander and libel is abolished and the publication of defamatory matter of any kind is actionable without proof of special damage. It is not uncommon for individuals to vent their frustrations in the online world, a world which is becoming more permanent as time rolls by, thanks to certain technologies which take snapshots of the internet at regular intervals to preserve it for posterity. An example of this is the Wayback Machine. Saying something online in the heat of the moment can have long-term and far-reaching ramifications to both the author and those who are the subject of the said outburst. It's extremely hard to remove these comments once published on the internet. So unless things are factually correct, go easy on naming names and emotional outbursts on sites like Facebook. It should also be noted that parents are still legally responsible for what their children say and do online. And it's not uncommon that the first a parent will hear of such online outbursts is when law enforcement officers come knocking. Just this week, Australian legal counsel Martin Bennett had a short message for those who allow themselves to attack reputations over the internet, imagining that they are safe under the cloak of anonymity. He said, "You can be hunted down and found," and that's just what Mr. Bennett has done for a Perth client, winning $30,000 in damages and costs, an apology, and undertakings from a Colac man that he won't post any more defamatory comments. So, a warning to all this week, be careful what you write, say, and publish online. There is no such thing as anonymity on the internet, and things said in the heat of the moment have a way of coming back to haunt, either in a civil or criminal way.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Adam checks out what's under the hood of the new range of Sony Bravia flat-screen TVs. AFAC to appeal the iiNet piracy ruling, opposition continues to rise for Conroy's internet filter, Facebook wins a patent over news feeds, and Skype withdraws from Windows Mobile. But first, thanks to D-Link, here's Dr. Ron with the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, experts warn that malicious Facebook posts could affect the prosecution of a man charged with murder. Microsoft says that Google is strangling its competition. Apple starts censoring adult content applications in its App Store. And as expected, AFAC lodges an appeal against iiNet. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Police in Queensland are asking the public to remain calm after a man charged with the murder of 8-year-old Trinity Bates was remanded in custody last week. The incident has received an enormous amount of media attention, and experts warn that comments left on a number of Facebook memorial pages may hinder the prosecution of the man charged with the girl's abduction and murder. Defence lawyers for the accused, 19-year-old Alan John Slater, applied to have last week's remand hearing held in a closed court, but the magistrate dismissed the application and media were allowed to observe the proceedings. One Facebook site has attracted more than 30,000 supporters, many of whom have posted threats, abuse and unsubstantiated claims about the alleged killer. To complicate matters, police say they're now investigating four people for allegedly posting pornography on a tribute website for the murdered 8-year-old. A professor from Deakin University's School of Information Systems, Matthew Warren, said that the online remarks could have a very real impact on the prosecution case.
It really has the potential to perverse the course of justice, because you could have a situation that the person concerned could not have a fair trial, because all of this disclosure of information about him, his personal life, his personal circumstances. In today's society, it isn't necessarily the right thing to allow anyone to post any information on Facebook and just let it self-regulate itself.
Facebook Global Communications and Policy Director Ms. Debbie Frost said last week that the company was writing to the Queensland Premier, Ms. Anna Bligh, and would apologise for the situation. Facebook's Ms. Frost said it was almost impossible to deal with this level of individual, intent on such cruel and offensive behaviour. The accused, Alan John Slater, has been remanded in custody for a committal mention on the 17th of May. Microsoft has accused Google of unfair tactics, locking users into using Google products. In a company blog post, a Microsoft spokesperson said last week that Microsoft is concerned about Google business practices that tend to lock in publishers and advertisers and make it harder for Microsoft to gain search volume. The comments were made after Google announced earlier last week that the European Antitrust Commission was investigating complaints that Google was hindering competition. One of the companies which made a complaint to the regulator is Chow GmbH, an online consumer advocacy company which has been wholly owned by Microsoft since October 2008. Microsoft said that Google was telling reporters that antitrust concerns about search are not real because some of the complaints come from one of its last remaining search competitors. Microsoft went on to say that ultimately what's important is not who is complaining, but whether or not the challenged practices are anti-competitive. Google declined to comment on the Microsoft blog post. Apple was criticised last week for censoring a German game in its App Store, which allowed users to undress a bikini model by shaking their iPhones. At its online App Store, Apple said it was tightening the rules by forcing developers from Bild Newspaper to modify the game, which up until now allowed iPhone users to undress a bikini model. The Federation of German Magazine Publishers, VDZ, criticised the move, saying that Bild Newspaper had already sold 100,000 copies of the application and that the decision threatened freedom of the press. A VDZ spokesperson said that they considered Apple's behaviour to be unfair, arbitrary, bad for business and dangerous, and that Apple's position underscores the need for editors to develop their own electronic distribution platform independent of Apple and Google in order to retain control over their applications. Apple was also blamed for inconsistency because it allowed the US magazine Playboy to offer some adult content applications. US media said on Monday last week that Apple had begun to remove risque applications from the App Store and that the stricter standards appear to be an effort to clean up the App Store before the first iPads began shipping in March. Apple declined to comment on VDZ's criticism. And in a not entirely unexpected decision last week, the Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft, or AFACT, lodged an appeal in the federal court against a recent judgment in the iiNet anti-piracy case. AFACT is challenging Justice Cowdroy's decision that the internet service provider iiNet had not authorised the illegal downloading of copyright material by its subscribers. While Justice Cowdroy found in favour of iiNet, it was made clear to the ISP that it was not in its interest to encourage high-volume downloaders or the distribution of copyright material. iiNet's Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Michael Malone, said that more legal proceedings were not a solution and noted that the studios themselves admitted during the court hearings that making content freely and cheaply available online was an effective way to combat piracy. The executive director of AFACT, Mr. Neil Gain, said that the judgment was out of step with well-established copyright law in Australia. The appeal is expected to be heard later this year. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
From a control freak of a company that made the device, I paid my hard-earned cash to buy.
Yes, I had a very bad experience with this phone.
Does that surprise anybody in this room?
Feel the freedom of unlimited broadband with no download limits and no throttling.
Oh yeah, there's got to be one in every country. Is he trying to censor the internet too?
But that's part of why the platform's so stable, or should be stable.
Oh, rubbish.
That's how rubbish. They work to keep the thing stable.
That's a rubbish.
Rubbish, rubbish.
So you can jailbreak your DS.
Yeah, pretty much.
Then in Australia, that's a legal problem. And that's ridiculous.
Now, Dr. Ron, when I mentioned this to you, you said, yeah, right.
Andrew doesn't like clicking buttons, does he? He doesn't like...
What do you mean? I don't... I've got lots of buttons over here I can click.
Careful, I will click one to shut us up.
He might.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Hello, everybody. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting across in front of me this evening, Dr. Ron and Dr. Graham. Good evening, doctors.
Good evening, good evening. How are you, Andrew?
Yeah, very well, thank you.
Good evening, Andrew.
Oh, you are there.
Yes,
that's good. Just checking your equipment there on the bench.
Yep.
Making sure that everything records okay for the podcast.
Yes.
Which will be coming to a podcasting session near you very shortly.
I'm going to have a hack at it tonight, I think.
Oh, it's your turn.
It's my turn.
Oh, excellent.
My turn.
Cool.
Blame me.
Cool. I'm not off.
Absolutely. That means I can stuff up and we can blame you.
I'll make with it what I can.
You know, it took a week or two to get back into the swing of doing the podcast. I must admit, there's a lot of buttons to push to get it from
the microphones to
your speakers in your and it's something. It just takes one wrong button and that's it. We're all shot. So, apologies if anyone's had an experience with the podcast in recent time, but it is out there. They're all out there. You can listen live, download.
Yeah, we do always manage to get something out, don't we? It's always.
Yeah, it might be a bit, but we get something there.
We have lots of different recorders running on the show, so we get it one way or another.
Yeah, we've got three in here, just in case one doesn't work.
Yeah.
And we've used three on some occasions.
We have.
Anyway, what a week it's been this week. I was listening to you there in the news there, Dr. Ron. It's INET have appealed. I mean, AFACT have appealed against the INET case is what I meant to say.
AFACT has appealed. Yes, we were waiting for it. They left it till the 11th hour, really, didn't they?
As you do when there's a lot of money up for grabs, and yes, they were basically giving what they say. Hollywood Film Studios lodged an appeal against the landmark legal judgment found in Australia, and this is what we were talking about when Adam was back on show 6, I think, for this year, or 7, whenever it was, that we all wanted it to go to the High Court of Australia because there's no court higher than that, and as a result, all judges' decisions are final there, aren't they?
Well, pretty much. So we're waiting on what's going to happen now. It's going to be heard later this year. The executive director of AFACT, which is the Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft, Mr. Gain, Neil Gain, he said that the judgment was out of step with well-established copyright law in Australia, and he thought they had a good case for an appeal. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. So it might be months and months yet before that's heard.
Well, the other one happened pretty quick, didn't it? It all sort of happened in about 6 months. Or was it 12 months? I don't know. It seemed relatively quick in legal processes.
In terms of legal processes, yes. So we'll wait and see what happens. Yeah. That'll be it, as you say.
Bring it on. What'll happen first? Oh, speaking of bringing it on, not that I want to turn this show political by any way, shape or form, but Kay Rudd, Mr. Crud, the President of Australia.
Yes, Kevin 07.
That's him. Yeah, he's sort of going downhill rapidly at the moment in the popularity stakes. And I'm not making any political judgment here whatsoever, but what I am saying is that the internet filtering system is going to potentially now come and rear its ugly head for the election at the end of this year here in Australia. We have federal and state Victoria elections at the end of this year, so it's going to be an interesting time. And
do you think average people care enough for it to be an election issue?
Look, it's going to be... My answer to your question, Graham, is no. But what I think is it's just going to be something in the back of people's minds that may just...
one more thing.
One more thing to add to the collection. You look at what the insulation issue's been, and you look at a couple of the other non-event things that have happened during the course of the year. Maybe someone will dig it up for just in time for the election. Yep.
And on top of all that, you're going to mess up our internet. I'll vote for the other fella.
Absolutely. It might just be that straw that breaks the camel's back.
Mm.
So watch this space come November. Oh, it's going to be an exciting year. I do like an election year. For no other reason, there's a lot of mudslinging and stuff like that.
So. But we've got the federal election and also lots of state elections as well happening.
I think there's a few around.
Yeah.
Victoria has one. I think I don't think New South Wales has got one. I think they've had theirs because they now have a woman running the show up there. We have our state election here in Victoria, and I think, as you say, I think Tassie or Western Australia has one as well.
There's a couple, yeah, definitely.
All right. So, anyway, what's been news this week, Dr. Ron? I notice I've got a new toy which I'll talk about fairly shortly. You've been playing with new software, which you actually put on the top of the rundown. So, well, let's get to the rundown. What a novelty this will be!
What did I put on the top of the rundown?
Dr. Ron is excited.
Oh,
Fring
Dr. Ron's
arrives
excited.
In Australian Android market.
Fring, Fring, Fring. Go to fring.com. FRING.com.
I've got Fring on my iPhone.
Now, we were talking about this months and months ago, and this was back when we were having the argument about Skype Lite Beta. And we were trying to get Skype working on our...
Clayton Skype. The Skype you have when you're not having a Skype.
We're trying to get Skype working on our handheld phones. Now, I've got an HTC, which is a Dream, HTC Dream, one of the first Android-powered phones. And other people have had the HTC Magic and other smartphones which run Android. And the way that you install applications, Andrew and Graham, in Australia onto an Android phone is via the Android Market.
And everyone's got a market these days, haven't they?
This sounds familiar, yeah.
Yes. We were limited in what we could install by what was on the market. And we installed Skype Lite Beta, and we found that, as Graham said, it was a Clayton's Skype. It's a Skype you have when you're not having a real Skype, because it actually made a phone call, and it called a gateway to connect to the Skype network. And we said, that's dumb. We should just be able to have an application that uses IP or data over the data network on your phone system. Well, Fring, everyone said to me, just load Fring, install Fring. Fring's great, Fring, Fring, Fring. But Fring wasn't on the market, in the marketplace. Well, it's now available in the Android marketplace. So if you are the owner of an HTC Magic or an HTC Dream or an HTC anything running Android, search in your marketplace. Fring's available now. And I've got to say, it works very, very well. And I can see why the phone networks are worried about this sort of technology.
Can I add just one more thing to Fring, just to bolster its... if you have an iPhone... and it's not jailbroken, just forget what I'm about to say. If you have an iPhone and it is jailbroken, go and get the Fring client for it. The reason is Fring takes your Skype contacts into its you know, belly of contacts, and what it lets you do, which Skype doesn't, is video calls. So if you've got a webcam and you want to ring somebody video call-wise on an iPhone, the Fring client will play the video, whereas Skype won't. So there's another little bee in Fring's bonnet. If you know what I mean, so...
I know what you mean. Now, I actually got Skype working last night. It was very, very easy. Now Fring is actually, it's an application which provides you with an interface into different messaging networks.
Yeah, it's one of these things that connects to all the different networks. It doesn't belong to any of them, so...
That's right.
There's a Skype and an MSN and an AIM and a something else and a something else and a something else.
That's exactly what it is. It's an interface to all of those sorts of networks. Now... our friend, longtime friend of Tech Talk Radio, Matthew Robinson, who's in Denmark, I was chatting to him last night on Skype, and I installed Fring.
Not Fring.
And, well, this is the interesting thing. I was walking around my house last night, and I had my HTC just wasn't on Wi-Fi. It was on the Three mobile telephone network.
Yes.
He was walking around his house in Copenhagen with his mobile phone on his mobile phone network, not on Wi-Fi, and we were talking to each other, voice over IP, using Skype, with a Fring interface at each end, and it was working very, very well. What we then did was just went Fring to Fring directly without using the Skype network, and was even clearer. It was a very, very good, very usable conversation, and we spoke probably for about 10 or 15 minutes that way. So, very impressive. It works very well, and if you're wanting to try it out, search for it on the Android marketplace.
And there's if you don't have an Android, it's also available for lots and lots of other platforms as well. I've got it on my Nokia phone, which is running the... Nokia-ish. That was an interesting sound.
It was.
The Symbian.
Symbian operating system. And Andrew, at least, has got it running as well on his iPhone.
Yes.
So it's out there. Fring is out there. If you want
give
more
it
information,
go
to fring.com.
There's a PC Windows version of it as well.
A PC, yes. Yeah. No, it's good stuff. I quite enjoy Fring. You just sign up as you do normally. But anyway, that's good.
Yes, it can do SIP,
it can do SIP, Dr. Awful, in the chat room.
I've got it on my phone here. Skype, MSN Live, ICQ, SIP, Google Talk, Twitter, Yahoo, AIM, Facebook. Wi-Fi, whatever that is.
Wi-Fi.
No, Wi-Fi.
Oh, Wi-Fi? Is that on your Wii player or something like that?
I have no idea. No, W-E-F-I. Don't know.
Okay, excellent. All right, chat. That's where that question came from. If you have a question for the panel, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. And there's a few in there this evening. That's where we communicate with those listening to us live online. You want us to take TalkBack? No way. But anyway, I've done TalkBack before. I'm just wondering, let's just open the fader number one and see if Warlock's there. Are you there with us this evening, Warlock?
I certainly am.
Oh, there he is.
There he is. G'day, Warlock. How you doing?
See, technology's working for us. Anyway.
In a way.
One of my new toys this evening is a new notepad. Notepad? Let me start again. A netbook. I'm lashed out because my...
Have you got a new gadget of the week?
No, it's not a gadget of the week. It's a new gadget of my going away because I didn't want to take my big laptop with me on the airplane. So I digressed and I spent a couple of $100 and bought myself one of these extremely small little PCs, which I just happened to know that you have one on the bench over there too, Dr. Ryan.
I do. I have an PC and I've used it for some time now. It works very well.
They're nice and small, aren't they? Very compact. And we managed to plug it into the right holes this evening, which is why Warlock is making somewhat of a late entry this evening. But at least you made it. How's things in up north in Sydney, Warlock, today? Is it?
It's been a bit rainy today. I've also got a EE PC. Mine's a 1000H.
Oh, yeah. No, that's exactly the same. I think that's 1008 or 1008AH, all these numbers.
But no, I bought 1000H.
Ah, yes, the zero, all the zeros. Yep. I bought mine.
Runs Mac OS X nicely.
Mac OS X.
No idea.
Now, hang on. Yes. No, we won't go there. I think a end user license agreement has been broken in that sort of thing. But anyway.
My Lenovo R60 is looking huge.
It is. It is. But heading off to the United States to do the 3D thing and NAB, which is the National Association of Broadcasters, in early April, which will be very interesting to see what all the manufacturers have got on offer for the stations to actually generate 3D content and the likes. And, I just needed a small notebook to take with me. And I'm also Mark Diggins, friend of Tech Talk Radio, who I think will come back to Australia one day. We've kept his seat somewhat warm, though it is cooling a bit. Mark tried using Virgin America, their in-flight Wi-Fi, and worked quite well. So I'm going to give that a go because I'm flying a bit of Virgin America when I'm in the States too. So,
cool.
All things going according to plan. It's got webcams. It's got everything. So it's a good little gadget, Dr. Ron. Why didn't you get me onto one earlier?
Well, I've had this for quite some time now, and sometimes I bring in Mrs. Dr. Ron's netbook as well.
Yes, you have a gaggle of netbooks over there.
Oh, yeah, she's using hers tonight. She's actually in the chat room as well. Dr. Laney is there. But she has I'll try to remember now. Should be able to remember off the top of my head. An Acer Aspire 1 netbook. So it's a different model, but that works very well too.
My other great gadget of the week I bought too, I lashed out. You know when you find something on eBay and you just think, oh, look, I'll just blow $15. If it's not good, it's not good. One of these little FM transmitter things to hook your iPod-y thing up to your car radio. I didn't really want to spend $80 or $90 at the local, you know, yellow shop or anything like that to buy one of these things. So I thought, oh, there's got to be something out there on eBay. And sure enough, there was. And sure enough, it was cheap. And I did get it. And it was a treat. $15 for a little black thing that plugs in the bottom of your phone.
Just describe it for us. Is it a cable that you plug in and it's a little box that hangs off the bottom?
I'll just hold it up to the webcam, which isn't here this evening. It's really a cylindrical thing. If you've got, a 10-cent piece out of your pocket, that's about how round it is. And it's probably about 3 centimetres, maybe 4 centimetres long. And on the front of it's got a little display with an up-down arrow button where you select your frequency. You just plug straight into the bottom of your iPhone and you tune in on your radio, what it says on your frequency display, and voila.
That's pretty nifty.
You get FM stereo out of one of these things into your radio. Now, Graeme...
I've never had much luck with these FM transmitters.
You were saying,
they always sound a bit dodgy to me. They was hissy or not quite right, so...
Yeah, well, I found this to be quite stable in the week that I've been driving around town with it, and it's given me no grief whatsoever. So the good thing about it is I can now listen whilst I'm driving through the suburbs anywhere. I can dial up any internet radio station I like and I can listen to it in the car, which is great.
I love it.
Because I'm going to the United States. I've been listening to KFOG because KFOG is a radio station in the Bay Area of San Francisco. So I thought I'd find out what's going on locally. And I've been listening to that while I've been driving around town. It's wonderful.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, I got one from eBay for mine that's plugs into the cigarette lighter and it charges it while it goes. And
yeah, this one does that too. Yeah,
broadcast to the radio, but it also comes with a miniature remote control.
Well, that sounds like fun while you're driving. What does the remote control do? Up, down, volume type sort of thing?
Yeah, volume, up and down, next song, previous song, and that sort of thing.
Oh, very good. How much did you pay for yours off eBay?
$40.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. That's what I love about eBay. You know, you could $40 in this day and age for a gadget like that's not too bad. So if you hear someone say that they're pretty good, have a bash. You can't really go wrong. It's better than spending $90 at a other shop.
The remote control and your iPhone, if it's not in a proper cradle, are probably illegal to use while you're driving in the state of Victoria and almost certainly in other places as well.
Mine, I plug mine in my cradle. It's good.
Good. If it's in the cradle and it's all plugged in, that's fine.
Because I can stick things in its bottom
whilst
it's in the cradle.
Oh, dear.
I can. It's not like some of those cradles where it's all sealed off at the bottom.
That one with the remote control, unless the remote control is solidly attached to something, then that would probably be illegal.
Yes. Thank you, Doctor.
No, well, it's a serious issue. You get pulled over for these sorts of things, for using your iPod in the car now.
Absolutely.
You can't do it.
Absolutely. I think it's well worth it, too. Don't talk on the phone and drive. Just watch. Drive down the street and have a look at how many people have got up to you while they're driving. You watch.
Oh, I know. They're everywhere. I don't know what the coppers are doing. They're not watching out for it. But,
no, they're on holidays.
Oh, is that what it is? Yeah, that'd be right.
Or either that, they're in court. Or, who knows where they are.
Well, they're not...
Train surfing?
They're not pulling. They're not pulling people over for talking on the phone, except me.
Oh, did you get done?
There's a story here, ladies and gentlemen. There's a reason for this pent-up angst.
Are we going to plead guilty, Your Honour?
No. Just driving to work, and I had a bottle of Coke sitting in my drink holder in the car. I took a swig from it. Thing I know, the roo and lights and
you were
noise
talking into your bottle of Coke again.
And that's what he said. He said, "I saw you hold something up to your head," and I said, "Look, I was taking a drink from a bottle of Coke." So yeah.
Can you describe the time of the day and what sort of traffic conditions there were when this happened?
It was light traffic conditions. It was the middle of the day, middle of a working day.
So it wasn't night. He couldn't mistakenly think you were holding up a phone or something.
Well, he was a fair way off when he saw it. Yeah.
Ah, yeah.
So
And what happened? What was the outcome?
Well, he eventually believed me. I showed him the log in my phone where I hadn't made or received a call, and he saw.
Oh, you had to go that far, did you?
Yeah.
That's a great story.
Excellent. When did this happen? Was this last week? Well, this week?
No, this
a while
was
ago.
A few weeks ago.
So it was nearly a very expensive bottle of Coke.
It was nearly a very expensive bottle of Coke, yes.
Yeah, what is it? That must be 150 plus in this state for doing something like that, I would imagine.
Oh, talk on the phone, at least that. I'm not sure. I haven't done it for a long while.
Let's back to the rundown. Dr. Ron has some coro that needs to be tabled.
Lots of correspondence, Andrew. Another tech prank installment. This
I
one
like
from
these.
Levi. Levi says, "This is my favourite prank. First, I shut down the victim's PC," he says. "Second, I restart and go into the BIOS, and I set it to only check the USB ports for boot devices. Third, sit back and watch the victim go crazy, wondering why his or her operating system won't start. I almost pass out with laughter, lol. That's fairly nasty, Levi."
Yeah.
A horrible thing to
you
do.
You could
to
at
someone.
Least plug something entertaining in the USB port for it to boot
into. That's what I thought. It wouldn't be hard to just boot an image up of something which has, been hacked or something. You know what I mean? A bit of fun. Yeah. Well done, Levi. That's good.
Chrome Ronan in New Zealand says...
This is another one.
This is another one.
Oh, fantastic. Well, just by the way, everyone, if you're listening and wondering why we're reading these out, we're soliciting your best tech pranks. There's a lot of them out there. It sort of happened in the Tech Talk office. And we figured, well, you can tell us what your best tech pranks are. And here are some of our listeners sending them in. Go on, Dr. Ron.
Chrome says, "Take a screenshot of the desktop." Oh, that's really mean. "Or a blue screen of death. Minimize the taskbar and hide all the desktop icons. Then use the screenshot as wallpaper."
Yep, with all the shortcuts appearing on it, but yep.
"Wait for the mark to return." We've got victims and marks. This is unreal. "Return to their desk and enjoy. Swap wireless headphones or headsets on two different phones in the same cube farm."
Oh, that'd be hilarious.
Or my favourite, the blue screen of death screensaver, which we have mentioned
before. Yeah, that's around, yep.
"It does a good fake restart and simulated crash with disk activity."
Mm. Yes. Do you know what?
Keep sending them in, everyone. They're good. Keep them coming.
Somebody got me on our forum a while back when the old forum, not the new forum that we've got now, that's really, really fancy and nice. It's one of our users, it's probably one of our regular listeners, and you probably know who you are, put as their avatar, their little picture that shows up underneath their username, they put an image that looks exactly the same as what Internet Explorer puts there when it can't find the image.
When the link's broken.
The little broken image icon that it puts there where there's supposed to be an image, but it can't get it.
There are people on the chats doing this right now as you speak.
Yeah, and I thought, oh, okay, there's something wrong with the forum. It can't find this guy's avatar.
Gotcha.
Was that
and
Ben,
I went searching for what it was.
Was it Ben May or somebody?
Well, it could well have been a Ben May type person, but hello, Ben, if you're listening.
GJMCN says, good episode on voice activation call centres. I think in the summer series we had an episode on call centres. Thanks, Adam, for the Logitech remote advice. I was considering one as a result of the HT Guys podcast, but your advice on old models sealed it. One real gain was I recovered full functionality with my Pioneer CD changer that I hadn't used for years. Very good. Also from TARDIS3, this is a little bit disturbing, this correspondence.
Who, TARDIS?
Yeah, this story from TARDIS.
Yes.
Who's noticeable by his absence in the chat room tonight. I thought he was there tonight. My daughter takes the train to and from school. At the railway station, there are guys giving out wristbands to all the kids from a company called Ask Jerry. It says, asking Jerry a question is very simple. All you need to do is this. Send your full name and suburb, or a question, to 199 and a phone number. Jerry will then send you an answer. Save the number in your phone for quick use next time you are stuck for an answer, and tell your friends about Jerry. Remember, Jerry knows something about everyone, so to see what Jerry knows about you, send in the person's full name and the suburb they live in. Jerry's answer is sure to blow your mind. Tata says, lots of kids in my daughter's school have now texted the number asking a question. Surprised by the amount of information this service seems to know about them. Their reply SMS confirms their name, school, and other personal information. It costs $4 per SMS.
Whoa.
He goes on about Facebook.
This is why premium numbers should be banned.
Yes. He says there's Facebook pages. A company that targets kids is making $4 per SMS and seems to know way too much information about them. Probably just a good Google searcher. Jerry is probably raking in the dollars, cha-ching, cha-ching. What does the panel think about this?
Oh, premium SMSs should be banned, especially for young users of mobile phones, because that's the best way to rack up their phone bills. But also,
you can get your carrier to block them to stop.
Yeah, but they should be blocked by default. Mm. It should be an opt-in rather than an opt-out type scenario.
Not. So if you've got kids with their own phones, then it's probably a good idea to make sure that you ring up the carrier and ask them to not allow premium SMSs.
Absolutely.
And, the other privacy issue with this thing, it's asking for the user's full name, and B, it's obviously providing a lot of personal information about people. So, I think that's probably worthy of investigation. Who would you refer that to for investigation?
ACMA.
Would the
ACMA maybe?
Yeah, ACMA.
ACMA will have they've got a place where you can complain about premium SMSs, and say so does the TIO, the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman, and I'd say both of those organisations would need to know about unscrupulous activity like that, because it's a real problem. It's a real problem. In fact, I'd want to talk a bit more about that after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Some of the social networking sites which prompted my opening monologue this afternoon on the show are causing a lot of grief for families, and unknowingly. In a lot, I refer to Facebook and how a lot of young people use it. I think we've had Susan McLean on the program, who's the cyber safety guru person, 27 years with Victoria Police, keeping kids safe online. And it seems to be a real problem where kids get onto Facebook, they get onto social networking sites, and they say things which are malicious, not true, and just downright disgusting about certain people. Now, the kids don't really have the wherefore out there to realise that they're making a really bad mistake, or potentially the ramifications of what they're doing. In a lot of respects, it can be perceived as a knee-jerk reaction for something that might have happened at school today, and some place to retaliate, which is open and free for people to go and do so. But a gentle reminder to all that obviously parents, you need to know that you are responsible for what your kids do online until they're 18 years of age. Otherwise, you might get some people coming around knocking on your door. I mean, law enforcement agencies, especially if they do stuff which is prohibited. And also the long-term detrimental cause that can concern or what it can do. For example, some search engines index these sites and save them for later use. Mm-hmm. And if you write something on a blog or on a a site like this, a social networking site, chances are that's going to be around for years to come. So someone Googles someone's name, comes up with that, and especially if it's a high-ranking page because there's nothing else to compete with it, then that person's going to be tarnished for a while, and so it takes a hell of a lot of time to pull it down. Now, another example is a chap in who was a victim of this in Western Australia just this week was awarded $30,000 in damages in a court, and the perpetrator, the person who was saying defamatory and nasty things online, was ordered to make a public apology and obviously to stop. But 30 grand is a big wake-up call if you think you can get online and start venting about people's character, I guess, for want of a better terminology.
Put a big dent in somebody's bank account, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. But it's not to say that you can't vent online, hence the reason why we have /rant. Mm. But you've got to vent in a factually correct way. You know, you've got to, if something happens to you, by all means, you're allowed to talk about it. But you may want to choose to remove names if it's of that way inclined. It's safer to do that.
Yeah, either tone it down and stick to the facts if you do name names, or if you're really going to go off, then don't put real names in. So Mr. X really annoyed me today.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, a member of my class or something like that. But if you start getting personal, watch out. It will come back either civilly or criminally and bite you on the bottom. Or your parents, for that matter.
Yeah. Now, there's another little angle to this, which has also been in the news lately, with Facebook sites that have been set up as tribute sites for people that have died in unfortunate circumstances. Particularly, this happens where friends of a younger person who might come to an unfortunate end might set up a tribute site to them on Facebook, and then
with
the best of intentions. But what happens is, because Facebook is what it is, social media, other people can come on and attach comments to that site. And there's been a couple of cases lately where there's been seriously offensive comments attached to the what should be a tribute site, and there's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing about what's going on here. The problem is they're using the wrong tool for the job. If you're going to set up a tribute site like that, Facebook is not the tool to do it, because it can be misused in this way. If you want to set up a site like that, find a way to make a standalone website that doesn't allow people to add stuff to it that you don't vet.
Or a blog that you moderate.
Exactly.
Using a moderated blog.
Correct.
They're easy enough to set up. There's plenty of servers out there that'll set up a website for you. Easy enough to find on Google. But Facebook and all those social networking sites, not the place to do that because of the issue where people can leave comments that you can't control.
There also seems to be some misguided thinking that you've got this level of anonymity when you're on the internet and you're not accountable for what you do or what you post or what you say. I sent put a link up in my Twitter account during the week, a tweet which was to an article.
Oh, is this the article in The Age? Yeah. I think the Melbourne Age about...
Yeah. Are you going to talk about that? Or
No, but off you go.
No, the gentleman's name is Martin Ead. And
I did read this. I think one of our listeners, GD, sent through a link for it too.
Yeah,
it was very interesting.
Someone, it was GD or was Lid or someone, but it was a very, very good read. Mr. Ead is in Perth, and he has a company, and he specialises in finding out who people are. So if you have been defamed and you're worried about, who the hell is GC248 that's saying all these absurd and ridiculous and blatantly wrong things about me? I want to find out who he is. And this guy runs a business, and he just uses his wherewithal and his resources to go back through blog posts, look at tweets and Twitter accounts, look at Facebook pages, and he'll find out who people are. And nine times out of ten, he can do that. And then if you want to take legal action against somebody, just as you would if the libel was published in a newspaper or a magazine or on a television program, then you can. And there's an example in this article where somebody actually, similar to the example that Andrew was making before, someone had to pay a lot of money or settled out of court for a lot of money because he made libelous comments about somebody on the internet.
And think about this: this is a guy running a private business able to find out this information. But if you really step across the line and you've done the wrong thing, someone can take action in a court, and the judge can just say to the company, you know, Facebook or whoever it might be, to reveal the IP address of that person, and then you go to the ISP who owns that IP address and say, well, who was using this IP address at this time on this day? And
say, oh, GC248, that's Graham Callaghan, and he lives here.
That's right. It's all recorded. And courts can order that information be used to find someone who's done something that's... the court doesn't take to.
I also heard during the course of the week, before we get too distracted, that even SMS calls are actually now the body of the emails or body of the text is stored for a few hours or a day or so afterwards. So, you know, it can be traced back if needed to through a legal process. So, I think that's all good. Just getting back to Facebook, the federal government will consider appointing an online ombudsman following offensive content posted on Facebook. Facebook memories site for the Queensland murder victims, Trinity Bates and Elliot Fletcher, have been deluged by obscene images in the past fortnight, prompting Premier Anna Bligh, who's the Premier of Queensland, to demand answers from Facebook over the sickening incidents. And this is a classic example of what's going on. And I think as a society, everyone has to have a bit of a look at what's going on here. And I know potentially... But who knows? Something should potentially be done about it. But who knows what you can do in this day and age of internet boundaries that have no boundaries? You know, if Facebook's in the States, well, we're powerless in Australia to do anything. But maybe it's there'll be an uprising because it'll be happening in the States. It'll be happening globally, just like it is here. So anyway, but what do you reckon? An ombudsman for Facebook woes? Unless we've got a portal into Facebook, I don't know how that would work.
What do you mean, an ombudsman into Facebook?
Well, the federal government's going to consider appointing an ombudsman following, or an online ombudsman following this offensive posting. So I'm not sure what's going to happen and how it could work. It's probably a bit like Mr. Conroy's internet filter. It's got lots of merits, but the online equivalent of the
TIO.
But it's a difficult balancing act because on one hand, we want a free and unfiltered internet where we can... run what services we like and say what we like. But on the other hand, we need to abide by the law, and the law applies to the internet as much as it does to print media and to television and everything else.
And in most cases, you don't need to change a lot to make it apply either. It already applies.
Exactly.
There's a lot of knee-jerk reaction, we need to change this or add this or make new laws where there's perfectly good existing ones.
That's right, yep.
Anna Bligh, the Queensland Premier, did actually send a letter to Mark Zuckerberg, who is the Facebook boss.
Yep.
And in that letter, she asked, she seeks his advice on what Facebook intends to do to prevent recurrences of this type of sickening events. So,
Facebook have apologised. They've said they're going to write a formal apology to the Queensland Premier for what's happened. And they've said that, look, while they can't, you know, they can't moderate, you know, all of the millions of comments that are made on Facebook every day, that they did apologise and said it was a horrible incident that had occurred on that tribute site, and they, you know, take steps to amend the problem.
That's correct. Facebook Global Communications and Policy Director Debbie Frost told The Punch, which I'm assuming is a newspaper
that's
or a journalistic company, website, that she had, and I quote, never seen anything like this. She said the company was writing to Ms. Bligh, who this week sent Facebook a letter expressing her outrage and would apologise for the incidents. But anyway, it's a big challenge in front for Facebook, and it's not just Facebook's problem. It's all other online social networking sites. Because
YouTube has similar issues as well at the moment.
In what respect to their videos that are being published?
Italy recently had three Google executives charged due to a video that was uploaded to YouTube of these boys bashing up a kid with Down syndrome. The Google executives, of course, didn't even know anything about it, but it was posted up there, and so they were charged with the fact that it was there, even though they took it down when they were notified. But the problem is there's, 20 hours of YouTube video uploaded every minute or something, and nobody can monitor all of that. Facebook's got the same issue. You can't monitor every single thing that gets posted by everybody, or you're just going to spend all day there clicking yes, that's okay, or no, it's not.
I think that was in Italy, Warlock, wasn't it? Was it an Italian court that said that the Google executives were guilty? Well, it might be having a bit of trouble hearing me from over here, Andrew. But yeah, I think that's what it was. So, yeah, it's it's concerning, really.
All right, just before we go to the break, just a couple of new things which came across the desk this week, which I thought was quite interesting. We've spoken about Fring on the program this evening, but does this surprise you, boys? Skype is going to withdraw support for Windows Mobile. What do you reckon's behind this? Skype has withdrawn its Skype Lite and Skype for Windows Mobile, blaming issues, whatever issues are, with the system for its decision. The firm has not made an official announcement, but a forum discussion posted on Windows Media Power User site has drawn a comment from Skype employees. The comment points to a new Skype Frequently Asked Questions on the Windows Mobile, which reads, "Unfortunately, Skype Lite, a version of Skype for your mobile phone, and Skype for Windows Mobile are no longer available for download from our site." So why? Why do you reckon Skype's making a exit or taking an exit from the Windows market?
Do you think it's because they're fed up with needing to cripple the product to fit in with the
may have something to do
the
with
needs
it.
Of the networks,
the wants
and
of the carriers
and the carriers and the yeah.
Potentially it has, because if you think about it, if you can circumvent using a mobile phone carrier and use their mobile internet instead, someone's missing out, and it's probably not the caller.
Well, talking to Matthew last night for 15 minutes, that was, what, 100 kilobytes of data I used or something, as opposed to a 15-minute international phone call. So I'm sure that the phone network would rather I made a circuit-switched call and the voice-over IP can, call.
Yeah, absolutely. Why wouldn't they?
For their, as far as their bottom line is concerned.
Yeah, too right. Mm. Now, speaking of telcos and bottom lines here in Australia, one of our major providers is Hutchison 3. Hutchison 3 recently merged with Vodafone to become VHA Australia. Now, what state that's in, I have no idea, because it's sort of been dragging on for at least 12 months. Well, I don't know whether they've consummated the marriage or not yet, but anyway.
Well, I think what they've done is the structures together, but they're still running the two separate brands. So if you buy something from 3, you get an invoice that says VHA Australia is who sold it to you, but the brands are still separate, even though it's the same company.
All right, well, technically, the earth moved like it did in certain other areas of the world at the moment, but this is figuratively speaking. Last Thursday here in Australia, the three network switched its secondary carrier or its roaming carrier from Telstra's, not NextG, were they, the old GSM network,
yeah,
to Vodafone's network. So
okay,
now if you move outside of a city centre on Hutchison's, you now roam to Vodafone. And then if you roam outside of the city centre and there's no Vodafone, you then fall back to Telstra. So they've got three levels or three tiers of networking that they're now running on their network. Now, if you're a 3 customer, chances are on Thursday you would have got the little SMS saying, please turn your phone off and turn your phone back on again. That was the telltale sign of what I'd just spoken about, being new data being sent down to your SIM card.
I didn't get one of those messages. Did you get one?
Didn't you? No, I didn't either. But a lot of people did. Maybe they just we went with the flow or something.
All right, so if I'm no longer in 3's 3G coverage area, my
yes,
phone, when it roams now, is going to roam onto Vodafone GSM.
Correct.
Not Telstra GSM.
Unless Vodafone GSM is no longer there either.
In which case, it'll go to Telstra GSM.
So they've done that really from, according to all reports, a financial reason, so they don't have to pay switching to Telstra or anything like that. So yes, and the other interesting news too, Telstra have dropped the price of their prepaid broadband data too, which makes it actually very competitive if you were in that marketplace.
Yeah.
So you're saying yes, you know about it, Graham?
Oh, yeah, no, I was looking at their mobile broadband offerings not long ago online, and yeah, it is interesting, the different pricing options.
It's come to a point where Telstra does offer a premium service. There's no doubting that. It is far superior to anything else on the Australian
definitely
market. As a result, you pay a premium for it. But up until just recently, I personally feel that premium was just a little bit too much to pay. But now with their new pricing arrangement for prepaid only, I'll stress that, prepaid, they've actually now brought it down to something which is not all bad. Still pricey, but it's nowhere near as pricey as it was, which means I think it's getting more affordable for Australia's best.
Yeah, that's why
I've
gone with Telstra for NextG for my iPhone, but unfortunately they didn't upgrade the mobile data packs to be the same. They're still hideously expensive.
It's funny you should mention that. They haven't updone that. Yes, it's a good question. And why is this, Telstra? Why have you updated prepaid broadband as opposed to your prepaid mobile's broadband? What's the difference? Technically, probably nothing, just the way they buy it.
Yeah, thanks but, Telstra. You're looking after people who buy a box in Coles and connect to the broadband, and you're not looking after your customers who've been with you for decades.
Well, you've got to bear in mind that every SIM card that you get
will let you connect to the internet. So maybe it's time to pop on down to your local Telstra shop and buy a prepaid broadband SIM and use voice calls on it. Because it's the same price. So, well, I think it's the same price anyway. But anyway, just an observation. Thanks for that, Warlock. To yeah, valid point. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Back with more in a moment. Cast your mind back to the 90s.
This is a tad awkward, but not quite as bad as Dr. Ron's choice of music.
Anyway, went in there and that...
Before we got distracted beautifully by that, I was going to talk about...
Somebody rings me every day at the moment that wants to change my light globes.
Yep, that's it. It was a challenge and an opportunity, wasn't it?
I don't know. good. Glad you cleared the air on that one.
It's out there.
Yeah, it is. As Mulder would say.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show. Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Yes, thanks to D-Link. You are indeed listening to Tech Talk Radio, coming live from 3WBC in Melbourne, wherever you might be on the internet. If you're listening to us on an iPhone app, I'm using Wonder Radio. That works really well for listening to us live. So, and of course, you've got the shoutcast options as well through the Tech Talk Radio website. And of course, don't forget, you can listen to us actually on your radio if you're in Melbourne. It's an amazing technology. Anyway, 3D television is coming very shortly. I'm off to the United States to check out the latest and greatest offerings when it comes to what the networks have or what the networks are going to get so they can generate that sort of stuff. Now, Blu-ray, I think we mentioned last week, you had quite a good discussion on it too, Dr. Graham, about the 3D and how it does your head in certain environments and things like that.
Well, the fear is that it might. I don't know that there's any real evidence one way or the other yet, but it's just something to watch out for.
Yes, yes. Anyway.
Who's just released the Blu-ray disc player, with a 3D Blu-ray display? Was it Panasonic?
A lot of them have.
Oh, really?
If you go to Blu-ray.com, which, yes, there is such a site called Blu-ray.com, you'll actually see that it was December last year, December 2009, that those people who control what Blu-ray is, does, and sounds like and smells like, have adopted a proper technique for encoding 3D images onto a Blu-ray disc. Now, the Avatar film was rumoured to be coming out fairly soon in 3D, but that has since been quashed by representatives from 20th Century Fox telling Mr. James Cameron, don't start rumours like that. What is correct is that Avatar will be out in 2D on April the 22nd in the United States, and hopefully that will replicate out here at the same time. If not, there'll be a lot of peer-to-peer stuff happening, I would imagine. So, but the 3D version is still on ice because it's still new technology, and how it's all going to work is all still... Well, it's not so much up in the air, but it's still being worked on, if you know what I mean. So, and of course, the technology is there to broadcast 3D. It's now a matter of getting sets out there, which I don't know, maybe TV stations could do a 3D broadcast and a 2D broadcast of something. Imagine that.
What could we have a 3D channel?
Yeah, you could have a 3D channel, couldn't you? Imagine 3D sport. That'd be a bit scary.
That'd be great.
No, it would be. And in America, there's TV channels are talking about broadcasting. I think it's the American football. The sort of gridiron cross-country wrestling they do over there, whatever it's called.
Be a bit like coming at you in 3D, wouldn't it?
Well, that's the idea, I guess.
Did you just say gridiron cross-country wrestling or something?
Yeah, well, I don't know what that would... Yeah.
What did Graham just say? Gridiron cross-country wrestling. I didn't see that at the Winter Olympics.
Have you seen them play? They wear all this insane, you know, protective gear. And then
Yeah, they're soft. They're very soft. Yeah. If you watch the AFL, they wear no protection whatsoever.
No, tight shorts and that's it. Yep.
And a Guernsey, and they just run headlong into each other.
That's right. In America, they double their size in protective gear, and yeah, then
helmets and face masks and shoulder pads and protective stuff.
Anyway,
Kevlar vests.
You can watch it in 3D.
They're
going to
watch it in 3D. Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of things which really lend itself to 3D, isn't there? Says here, looking around the studio, wondering what else. Look, apart from feature films and stuff, which are all being done, and the cartoons, which are very easy to do in 3D.
Your cartoons in 3D these days, yes, very easy to render.
Everything that comes off the computer is all easy to do in 3D. So, look, who knows whether we will see a 3D channel, but what is certain is that we need to get 3D television sets out there. Now,
that's what we haven't got yet. We haven't got 3D display devices that we can buy.
That's right. That's right. Now, the stuff that I've seen, or the two sets that I've seen here in Australia, I saw one at SMPTE, which was a trade show last year, it was a Sony set. It did not need glasses, and it was running feature film quality material into it. which was either 2K or 4K video, which is what you see in the cinema projected onto the screen.
So you'd get about 30 seconds of that on a Blu-ray disc, would
absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, absolutely stunning. It worked very well. Its angle of, you know, if you know how that you've got sort of like got to be in front of things, if, as soon as you move about 10 degrees, it all stops.
Yeah.
The angle, whatever you call that angle, on the Sony set was actually quite good. You could move, you know, 25, 30, maybe even 45 degrees at a guess, away from it or look at side on, and you would still get a relatively good three-dimensional look at things.
That's still a lot less than you're used to with your TV.
Yes, correct. Now, there's some other sets out there, which I can't remember what the name, the brand is. I should go and check my photos because I've got a photo of it. In fact, I think I posted it up on TweetPic the time when I was up there. It might have been just the Sony one when I was there. Have a look on the TweetPic site if you want to see the television set that I'm referring to. But anyway, there are a couple other manufacturers that are doing it, and we're starting to see new sets come out which need the active glasses for the vertical and horizontal polarized light or anything like that.
And there's still this battle between the different technologies.
There is.
And it doesn't affect the media. The media just has the two images on it and it'll be displayed in whatever way.
Yep.
But yeah, lots of different technologies we can use.
And we can broadcast anything. We just have to choose what we're going to broadcast in a lot of respects.
Mm.
Anyway, I'm going to be reporting back from Las Vegas when I'm there in April about all the new toys. But in the meanwhile, Adam caught up with Sony in Sydney for this week's View from the Couch.
So here we are. We've taken the View from the Couch on the road again this week. I'm at the Sony Bravia launch in Sydney. I'm talking to Paul Colley, who is Technology Communications Manager with Sony Australia. Paul, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the kind of things you've been launching here today?
Yeah, well, it's a very exciting day for us. We've announced 26 new Bravia TVs. A few of the features, of course, 3D TV, which is coming in July, where you'll get the whole experience of 3D. But particularly exciting for us today is Bravia Internet Video.
Mm-hmm.
We've announced 15 TV stations, if you like, Internet TV stations, available straight through the cross-menu system on the Bravia TV. And you can get Yahoo 7 catch-up TV. So if you miss an episode of your favourite show, you can go and get that. SBS, which obviously has a lot of sport, and with the World Cup coming up, that's very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Billabong is an Australian channel that's exclusive to Bravia, where you'll get the latest in surf. And then there's 12 other channels as well, which you know, everything from YouTube to Wired and the like.
So with the 7 deal, I was actually impressed because it seems to have all the content that Plus 7 has on the web, which is like ahead of what 9 and 10 offer, for example. One obvious, one notable exception is iView. Is this a locked-in deal with 7, or are you in negotiations for further content to add in the future?
We're in discussions with many content providers at the moment. These are the ones that we're able to have ready in time for the launch.
Yeah.
We are in discussion with ABC. Yeah. We're not quite in a position to announce anything yet.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, we want to open up the opportunity for as many content providers as possible.
But so it's not just an exclusive deal. Sorry, if your favourite show is not on 7, you miss out.
No.
No. One of the things I was interested in is, does it include television ads?
Well, that's completely up to the content owners, how they want to use their content. We make the channel available, and what the so in the case of Yahoo 7, what they want to do with their content on there is totally up to them.
Mm-hmm.
So the system certainly supports you know, pre-roll ads, just like you have on the internet. Or post-roll or mid-roll and all that sort of stuff. So I guess we'll see that evolve as people get used to what the sort of take-up is.
But none of that advertising will actually be applied by the Sony platform. It's not coming from Sony. It's all coming from the content providers.
That's right. Yep.
Okay. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you about is, I know in the US there's been something maybe called a Bravia Link that lets you, a box that you can plug into a television that's not a IPTV compatible to watch this kind of stuff. Is that the kind of thing we're likely to see here, or will you only get this stuff if you go out and buy the new Bravia?
Okay, so these 21 TVs that we've got here have it all built in.
Mm-hmm.
And you will see other devices coming from Sony that you'll be able to, that will have Bravia Internet Video as well. So you won't have to buy a whole new TV.
Okay.
You'll be able to just access it on a smaller device. It's much more affordable.
So you might see, we'll say, a Bravia Internet Video set-top box, although it might be called something different.
Yeah, it won't be a set-top box specifically, but we'll talk about that in a few weeks.
Is that the kind of thing that we might see built into Blu-ray players and other Sony devices as well?
Yeah, potentially that's the obvious place where you'd see this sort of functionality. And that means that, you know, customers who have already invested in a nice new high-def TV, you know, if they're not left out of the loop, they can just buy a few hundred dollar device and get both the best of both worlds, high definition and internet.
Now, does the content that we've seen here, the IPTV content, tie into the PlayStation Network content that you get on a PlayStation, or are they completely separate platforms?
Yeah, you'll see PlayStation is obviously has a lot of different capabilities. It's a very powerful machine. Mm-hmm. So you'll see different solutions on both platforms, but you'll also start to see them overlap as well. So that's a space that's evolving. As the, it's a very new technology, and it's going to change people's behaviours in the way they use TV. So we'll see that evolve over time.
Just one more quick question. I wanted to ask you about the 3D televisions and the glasses. Now, these are active glasses, not passive glasses, so they run on battery, so they need to be recharged. Is that right?
Yep, so the benefit of using active glasses, which is what we use, means that you can get full high definition 3D. Mm-hmm. If you're not using active glasses, you're not going to get full high definition because it has a half the resolution. They do have batteries to run them because they're little LCD shutters inside the screens, inside the lenses of the glasses, and you'll get, you know, somewhere around 100 odd hours of viewing, which is a lot of movies, before you need to replace the batteries.
And will they throw in a pair of glasses with each television, or how's that likely to
So work? With the 3D TVs, you can they'll come with two sets of glasses in the box. And then there's also a couple of models of TV that are 3D ready. So you can buy the TV now. If you want 3D later on, you can buy a little kit, which you'll be able to then add to the TV to give you the 3D experience.
Okay. And are those glasses only compatible with Bravia televisions? Is it like an industry standard, or will each vendor's glasses only work with their televisions?
Yeah, it's very difficult to have an industry standard with the glasses because they're so tightly linked to the technology that's in the TV. So each manufacturer's glasses you'll find will need to be specific to that brand of TV.
Great, thank you very much for your time.
Okay, good on you.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, here we go. New formats, new glasses. How's the shutters in your glasses? Hopefully it won't hurt.
No.
Are you saying it'd be 200 hertz and each 100 hertz or 100 fields would be given to one eye and the other 100 to the other eye?
Yeah, so normally you see, 25 frames or something, or 50 fields
for PAL,
on the TV screen in a second. So what they'll do is they'll double that, hopefully, and have little... They're not actually shutters, they're anything that moves. They're just glass panels that can be made to go dark, LCD things.
Yeah.
And they'll just make one eye dark and show you the image for the opposite eye, and then they'll swap them over and make the other eye dark, and yeah.
Anyone with epileptic fits and stuff? I wouldn't go near these. If I were you, could do some really interesting stuff.
Yeah,
so.
It could be. I think it would be well beyond the frequencies that would upset that sort of system.
What I don't understand is why we need glasses when I've seen stuff which works without glasses. That's what I'm going to be asking in NAB when I'm over there.
Yeah, because of the problem of showing a different image to each eye from a distance, you need to use technology that's kind of like these, you know, the old moving postcards where you change the angle and it changes the image.
The holographic things.
Yeah, not the holographic ones. The ones with the rib surface swaps between two different images depending on the angle. It's a little bit along those sorts of lines. And, yeah, it's really dodgy to try and get it to work properly for... You know, setting up in a lounge room where not everybody's sitting right in front of the TV.
Now, talking about active glasses there as well. So these glasses are going to be powered.
Yeah.
They have a battery in them.
Yes, they'd have to, yes.
Don't drop them. I reckon they'd be pricey to replace. Especially.
Yeah, probably.
Until especially
they probably don't need to be, but they probably would be. Like remote controls that are, you can. Yeah, you know that it only cost them, you know, 25 cents to build the remote control. But then, if you go and try and buy a spare one for your brand name TV, they're going to charge you $80 for it.
Like the remote keyring for your car, which only costs them 50 cents to produce, and it costs you $180 to get a new one.
Yes.
Then you got the key factor.
They're not exactly high tech, the glasses. I mean, it's just an LCD screen and a little infrared receiver to get the timing right from the set.
To sync or do something to the set. Yeah.
Well, they'll either use RF or infrared to have a signal to trigger to make sure it's synchronized up with the TV.
Omo in our chat room says, just wait, soon you'll have to update the firmware in your glasses before you can watch your program.
Yeah, I can see that possibly happening.
Crikey. Where are we heading with this stuff?
I just want to abolish your glasses. I don't think glasses are a good idea. I know why they're doing it. But
you're not a fan, are you? I'm detecting that.
Well, I've seen it without glasses, and it looks absolutely brilliant on no-glass TV sets. Why do we have to have glasses? It's things that kids can put fingerprints on, and things can get lost and lost under the couch, and then if you drop it and break it, well, yeah.
Mm. But from what we're hearing, it's going to be a better experience with the powered glasses, and it's not as critical in terms of the angle that you're looking at. That's
might be cheaper too. The screen technology to do it without glasses might be more expensive too. That might be another factor.
Absolutely. It's like going to IMAX or even to the Village Cinemas or Hoyts or whoever's got it. But yeah, you get your glasses as you go in the door. It looks really schmick.
Your mission, if you choose to accept it, you're going to the National Broadcasters
NAB
Convention.
Yeah.
Find out.
Absolutely.
Find out for us.
Absolutely. 3D workflows, they rock. Anyway, well, how long will it be before we see 3D ads in cinemas? Can you imagine that? Can you imagine the car leaping out of the screen at you or the man riding the horse coming at you?
The way 3D movies are taking off, yeah, people, are, it's going to be done for sure.
Imagine James Bond in 3D.
Ooh.
That's an interesting idea.
It's going to be a matter of, buckle yourself in, hold on to your hemorrhoids. You're going to have all sorts of stuff, as you say, flying out of the screen at you and... You're going to have the sound working overtime. It'll be an incredible experience, won't it?
Next, they'll be vibrating a seat. We'll get 5D or 4D or something like that. I think they've got some of those cinemas in Hollywood Gold Coast thingies, haven't they?
Oh, where the seats actually move and shake and...
Yeah, where they rock you around a bit in the seat just to add to that realism type. So that'd be good when you're having your Coke, wouldn't it? It'd be like flying, hitting an air pocket. And,
whoa, yeah, might not be good for the lolly sales.
Yeah, all right. Chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where we can be found if you want to talk to us while we're live to air. If not, visit the website. Podcasts are all there. You can pick up Adam's podcast, hear that just again if you wanted to.
Yep.
Pick up the stream. We'll be back with more in a moment. Now, let's talk about Freeview.
Hey, someone just joined the wave.
They're the people I want to avoid the calls from.
Comes in very handy, especially when your files get really, really big and corruption takes place.
So you went,
Dude, it's not even a beta. It's just for us to play around with.
They also cited taxes and freight costs.
Just mount it on your desktop and run it direct.
It's a big risk.
Oh, you watch the webcam.
Yeah.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's one-way technology radio show.
The man who did that stinger is actually on the radio as we speak. Warlock, he's joined us there. Warlock, thanks for doing that Elmer Fudd thing. Do you do a lot of character voices in your travels, or is that just a one-off for us?
It's something that I like to do from time to time, but I don't often get enough opportunity to do it. I've got a bit of a... somewhat whitish, not as big as Mel Blanc's vocals, but I can do quite a few of them. Of course, some of his are sped up and slowed down, so he had the advantage of that after effect, but I do like to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it's very good. Thank you very much for doing that.
Yes,
you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Andrew, Graham's in, and of course, Warlock is joining us via the technology of Skype, if his modem hangs in there for a bit longer.
Warlock's the new Justin.
Yeah, where did Justin go? Did anyone see him? He hasn't fronted for weeks now.
He sent an apology text tonight, but he's going to be here next week, he hopes.
Yeah, famous last words.
Isn't that what he said last week?
Yeah, I think it was.
All right, let's upward.
He's a busy man.
Yeah, I wonder what he's up to.
I dread to think.
Let's talk about Apple while he's not here, shall we? Because that's what we do.
What have Apple done?
Apple are shooting for the big end of town now, which is probably not come as any surprise to anyone, really, but Apple's making a concerted push into the enterprise market in Australia, hiring direct sales staff and pitching its solutions to large corporate customers. The vendor is looking to take advantage of their success in the consumer market, sliding onto the desktop and forcing its way into the data center, which is somewhere Apple and data just sort of never quite went, really, in my book, but... there are some organisations that are through and through Apple, and good luck to them. They tend to run servers because there is a server software and all that for the Apple system.
There certainly is, and it works very well.
Do you see
well.
Much of it out there, Graham?
No, virtually none at all. The only places are places that do graphic design or artwork or that sort of industry.
I agree.
That's the only place I see that... other than that, I think they'd really be pushing uphill.
I actually asked a client of mine today who is all Mac-based who said he couldn't see my FTP server. I said, can you ping it? And he goes, what's ping? And I said, oh, okay, fine. Anyway, so that was the end of that. And I don't know. I think there is a shell where you can ping with Apple. Someone will tell me on the chat, but would have been quite handy. But anyway, his FTP software had to have the three letters F, T and P in front of it. It couldn't connect to just like a server name or an IP address. You had to have the FTP dot and the rest of the URL to actually connect. Anyway, we resolved that. Wasted about half an hour of my day trying to get him to do that, but nonetheless, we got there. But anyway.
Apple's cleaning up its App Store as well. Did you know?
Yeah, I think we talked about this briefly last week about removing some certain salacious images from it. Is that right?
Yeah, they've removed a controversial game which was published by a German magazine. No, this isn't the Kick the Baby. This is a one where you shake your iPhone and the clothes fall off the bikini model.
Oh.
And Apple said that wasn't in very good taste and they removed it. But the producers of the game said criticized Apple for being a little bit selective in what it did it censor. Yeah, because there were products there in the App Store published by US Playboy magazine, which contained some adult content. And they said, well, you're being a little bit arbitrary here in what you you're censoring.
Of course, they've changed their rules a few times over the course of history. So, possibly some things would get through under one rule, and then the rules change and other things don't get through. So,
well, there were media analysts in the United States that said it was probably a clean-up prior to the upcoming release of the iPad, and they were trying to just get things a bit tidier.
I see. So what was the name of that game?
The name of the game was, I'll tell you, it was Bild, B-I-L-D newspaper. Had the game, which was called... I had it in the news. We have to go back and listen to the news, Graham. Sorry.
Right. It'll be up on Cydia or Rock, one of the jailbroken sites, before you know it. So it won't go away. If you've got a jailbroken iPhone, it'll be there for one and all.
The newspaper's website's bild.de, B-I-L-D.de.
Okay. I found another interesting app for the iPhone the other day. Once again, if you've got a jailbroken one.
What did you find?
You know how it's... traditionally, the iPhone's not been really up to spec for multitasking. And if you wanted to use Latitude or anything like that, it was somewhat tricky because, you couldn't... You had to actually have it in the foreground to actually tell your friends where you actually were. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I've since found a little application called Longitude as opposed to Latitude, which is available on the non-Apple site.
On another non-Apple site, on a competitor site.
And now that works really quite well. It does its little updates every so often, just sits there and runs in background. You don't even know it's running, actually. So
There's also a program on the jailbroken app store called Backgrounder, which lets you put anything in the background.
Yes, that's a good one. But this little app actually does it without that too, which is really handy. So I'm going to run it in the United States when I'm there so you can see where I am in Vegas and San Fran and all that sort of stuff. So
cool.
Those of you who know.
Apple also got in trouble for removing genuine swimsuit store applications from their site and had to put it back again because somebody said, well, we're actually selling swimsuits and it's just got pictures of models with them. And they said, no, you can't have that. And they said, whoops, we'll put it back again.
Come on, Apple, lighten up.
Yeah. Here's another interesting little Apple story too. Apple hit by supplier bad practices. Well, this is probably not just unique to these guys, but Apple has admitted in a new report that the company used three suppliers in the past year that had hired underage workers. The supplier responsible for 2010 progress report acknowledged that Apple suppliers had 11 underage workers on their books. Well, if you get that stuff made in those sort of countries, I can't see why that would be detrimental. I'm not condoning that. Anything like that, but you know, a lot of people would do that. Probably the T-shirt that you're wearing has been made by people that are.
That's the problem. They go for the cheapest bidder, and how does the cheapest bidder get cheaper than his legitimate competitors? That's how.
Exactly.
All right. One other brief thing with that App Store banning stuff is that some developers noticed briefly in the new betas of the operating system that they were testing with a category called explicit, which they thought some of those apps may come back into in the future.
Ah.
It was quickly removed, but they did see it there and there was screenshots of it.
Well, okay, that'll probably hit the filter here. You won't get that in this country. Yeah. All right. In other interesting news, Microsoft says Google axe raise antitrust issues. Here we go again.
Oh, talk about the pot calling the kettle black. I couldn't believe this when I put that in the news. Microsoft's having a whinge because Google's being anti-competitive.
Absolutely.
Yeah, righto.
Absolutely. Microsoft has made its most vehement and public attack on Google, calling its internet rivals' actions potentially anti-competitive and urging victims... I use the word victims there, to file complaints to the regulators, I reckon, to take the heat off. The broadside comes a day after Microsoft-owned businesses, along with two other small online companies, complained to the EU about Google's operation there. What on earth could Google be doing that's anti-competitive?
And you know at least two of those small companies are owned by Microsoft now.
Well, didn't the EU came down on Microsoft recently about they had to make, what was it, Internet Explorer?
The EU regularly comes down on Microsoft for being anti-competitive.
I'm just trying to think of the latest one. Wasn't it IE
it's
had
one
to
of their
be favourite optional?
Sports over there.
It's called Microsoft anti-competition bashing.
Yes.
Okay. Microsoft is also fighting a plan by Google to digitise millions of books currently under scrutiny by the US Department of Justice. Yeah, that'd be fun, wouldn't it? All these interesting law things potentially coming up, verdicts and stuff.
Microsoft.
Good to search online.
Microsoft said, ultimately, what's important is not who's complaining. Look over here, but whether or not the challenged practices are anti-competitive.
Okay.
Competitive. Let me speak in English. There we go.
Now, on the good side, Microsoft actually, they crippled a spam network.
Oh, this is a better story, isn't it? That's what we like to hear.
We go from one extreme to the other.
Good on
show.
You, Microsoft. So we've shut down a botnet, have
yeah,
we?
Yeah, they did, and they needed the help from the justice system in the US.
Cause so having built the world's most exploitable operating systems and the world's most exploitable mail clients, they've then actually shut down a network of affected machines.
What's wrong with Outlook Express?
I think they needed the help because they had to shut down actual domains where the commands were being sent through and not just clear off the software off PCs.
That's right. Microsoft said in a combined it combined technology with an extraordinary legal maneuver to cripple a massive network of hacked computers that had been flooding the internet with spam. The software titan's Digital Crime Unit, now we know they've got one, got clearance from a US judge to virtually sever the cyber criminals' command computers from hundreds of thousands of worldwide infected machines, obviously a zombie network. So Microsoft got a US judge to grant an ex parte, if I'm saying that correctly, temporary restraining order that let the firm erect the cyber blockade without warning bot herders, masters of the botnet.
Bot herders.
There you go.
That's a good expression.
There's great new things that come out in the English language thanks to the technology, isn't it? You're going to Google that now, are you?
No, I'm changing my nickname in the chat room. There we are.
So there you go. Apparently the virus or the exploit, otherwise known as WhaleDAC, if I'm saying that correctly, because they keep coming out with great new names each day, is estimated to have infected hundreds of thousands of computers worldwide, letting its masterminds actually use them and send spammy emails. Because hasn't there been a lot of spam lately? And especially there's one which is driving me crazy, which I think is the Credit Union Australia. Heaven help anyone who's clicked those things. And a few other bits and pieces that have been doing the tracks around the place.
Graham, what are you doing?
What are you doing over there, Graham?
Nothing. Spam.
We're about to hear from the Vikings, I think. Is that right? Is that what you're looking at?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
All right, so bot herders. There you go. What's a bot herder? We'll be doing a 20-point question after this. I think that'd be pretty good. Now, whilst also on vulnerabilities and things like that, Adobe patches critical download manager flaw. You know the download manager that you get whenever you go and download Flash or anything like that, or one of your web browsers wants to. And
yeah, the one that every 3 days downloads 60 meg
doesn't it?
Adobe Reader. Yeah, thanks Adobe.
We love
and
you, Adobe.
And it does it in the background, and you don't know what it's doing, and you're thinking, why is my machine so slow? And you look down there, and
why have you used up 2/3 of my mobile broadband pack?
It's Adobe working wonders in the background again.
So what's that little window there with that progress bar running? Oh, yeah, it's Adobe's at it again.
It's a funny little white thing with all those little grey dots in there.
Message for Adobe, learn how to use diffs. Don't distribute a whole damn thing every time.
Yeah, well, we know Steve Jobs, what his thoughts are on Adobe. But anyway, there was a bug in their little download manager, which is the program which when you click to say, yes, I want to install the latest version of Flash on my web browser, they kick off the download with their own, you have to say yes, allow, and do all that sort of stuff and breach all your security. Why they just don't let you download the file is beyond me. But anyway, you've got to use this download manager, and there's been a flaw in it. And Adobe has released a security update fixing the critical flaw in its download manager software, which means you'll all have to download it again. More bandwidth on your mobile broadband.
Yes.
So the issue applies to any instances of the software downloaded before February 25, but will not apply to any new versions of that, according to Adobe.
Mm-hmm.
And to get it right the first time would be really good. All right. So, and other interesting things too, Australians report $70 million worth of fraud losses in 2009. Does this surprise anybody that Australians were most prone to scams that asked for upfront payments to secure larger fictitious returns, according to the ACCC.
Oh, people are slow to learn, aren't they?
Especially up north. The report was launched in the National Consumer Fraud Week. We have lots of weeks like that that I'm not really aware of. But anyway, there's another one. Did you know that? The National Consumer Fraud Week?
I'm sure it's a half a dozen different weeks this week. It usually is.
Okay, well, this week it was revealed that 20,554 cases of scam had been reported during the year.
During the week? Oh, during the whole year. No, that's
year,
all right.
Yeah, what? Resulting in a total loss of $70 million. Now, what do you reckon people do? Oh, I've just been fleeced. Do you go down the local cop shop and say, hey, excuse me, I've been fleeced, and or you go to the ACCC, or you go to the feds, or how do they find out these things? Like, who don't
have to report
it?
You have to report
them. You have to report them to the police. That's probably all you can do, and the police are going to say, yeah, what am I going to do about it?
Well, it's theft, isn't it?
It's theft. The police will investigate.
It is, but it's theft by stupidity.
It's very, very preventable.
Yeah.
In a non-technological theft that happened today, and I was just shaking my head in amazement as I saw this on the news, a woman had $125,000 cash stolen when she had
she shouldn't walk around the streets with that much in your purse.
She had her handbag stolen and she had
Oh, yeah, I'm kidding, eh? I didn't think...
I'm not kidding. This was in Mildura in Victoria's north. She had her life savings carrying around in her handbag because she didn't trust banks.
To be fair, she probably has reasons in her life history to not trust banks, coming from a part of the world where the banks are not at all trustworthy.
Well, that's right. The woman said she came from a war-torn country where the banking system had collapsed, and she thought that was the safer thing to do. But I thought, God, you know, your life saving, $125,000 cash.
Yep.
That's just, it's mind-boggling.
Way too much.
It really is, yeah. At least if it's in the bank, then the bank have some level of insurance there against those sorts of things from happening.
Very good. All right. Well, there's the lesson of the story. You're not going to be scammed carrying stuff around in your bag, really, are you? So you just get knocked off instead.
And if someone sends you an offer in an email that sounds too good to be true...
It will be.
That's too good to be true.
It's a bit like anything. Hey, the other interesting news, too, I upgraded my memory stick in the weekend. I got sick of carrying 4 gig...
Oh, speaking of too good to be true, what, 16 gig memory sticks for $4 or something?
No, not quite that. Not quite that. But I just thought, why am I carrying 4 gig around in my pocket when I'm going to have 16 gig in my pocket for not much more? And it's it's opened up a world of possibilities to me now in carrying all those large files. And making bootable USB drives. Have you tried that, Craig?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Tell me, how do you do it? Is there a simple and easy way to do it? Because there seems to be a lot
there's lots of different ways to do it, and some of them are more simple than others.
Is there a better way?
Microsoft released an application to do it for booting and installing. Unfortunately, they stole some open source code, so then they had to take it away and then re-release it with all the source code on it.
That's it. That's...
Yeah, there was talk at one point about buying Windows 7 on a USB stick to install it from. I don't know whether that's actually happened at any point.
I haven't seen it.
No.
Although you could probably download it like you do these days and make an ISO image onto a thing.
You could certainly roll your own. That would be no problem at all. But, there was talk about there being an official release on Memory Stick, which would be fine. If you think about the amount of content, you're talking about a 16-gig Memory Stick. A single-layer DVD-ROM, like we typically burn, is 4.7 gig.
Yep.
A dual-layer one, which you typically buy a movie on, that's produced in a factory, is dual-layer, and that's 8-point-something gig.
Yep.
So you're talking about being able to fit almost two completely full dual layer DVDs on one memory stick.
Yeah, I use it because I can now carry around fairly sizable high definition files if I'm going from a post suite to an audio suite or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And get your couple of TV commercials onto one stick in true uncompressed HD and stuff like that, which is really good. I'm finding it very handy to do that. The only problem is the writing speed can be a bit slow, and that's where you pay your bucks. If you want one that writes very quickly.
Yes, I've noticed this too. Yes, the cheapy 4 gig ones, it takes quite a while to write as compared with the more expensive ones,
All right, so that was another thing I did during the course of the week. Back to the news. Did you know that there's an anti-filter protest this Saturday?
No.
Anti-net filter...
That's the one.
Australian government net filter protest.
Yep. Organisers of the Stop the Filter and Block the Filter National Day of Action have revealed a mix of protests, information sessions and picnics on Saturday, March the 6th, to protest against the federal government's plans for mandatory ISP internet filtering.
Oh.
Where's this happening?
All over, apparently.
Are we going to go on a picnic?
I don't know.
They have a Tech Talk protest picnic.
Take the blanket?
Yeah. And the thermos?
I suspect it's probably in Canberra on their lawn where Mr. Garrett demonstrated his insulation.
Oh, dear.
Yes. So you might sit on some fiberglass or get electrocuted or something up
Ouch.
There. But other than that.
The itchy wool.
Protests are being organised by the Stop the Filter group in Brisbane and Perth, which organisers said would be suitable for people who already know about the filter and who wish to protest. The group was also arranging a rally in Melbourne on the same day, but this was located at the Victoria State Library and would be information-focused. It'll be somewhat more relaxed affair in Sydney, Adelaide and Perth, where the Blocked Filter group has organised cyber safety picnics. These were suited to parents, families and people who are unfamiliar with the filter.
Hmm.
So there's something happening all around the place.
So it sounds like it's not just a protest. You can go along and learn some of the issues behind it and how it all is going to affect people, which might be worthwhile.
It could well be.
Does that mean if a lot of people are standing around protesting censorship, they're just going to be swearing a lot?
Yeah, let's think about that.
Don't know.
But
a lot of beeping going on.
Yeah, there could well be. The Greens, the other alternate party, are saying that the filter issue is too hot for an election year. The Australian Greens were looking for a way to knock on the head internet filtering legislation to be introduced to Parliament as early as this month, according to Scott Ludlam, who is a senator based in Western Australia. Speaking at the Kickstart Forum, Ludlam predicted that the federal opposition would also attempt to stall the introduction of legislation, but he said that the opposition's policy position on the issue remained unclear. I really do think this is going to be an interesting issue. I think we were talking about this briefly near the start of the show, but it's an election year, and I think this sort of stuff might just make it... You know,
yeah, but the summary of that was that I really don't believe in the filter, but I'm too gutless to stand up and say so in election year and be risked, you know, the accusation of wanting to let some of this stuff into the country.
Yeah, but also I think you've got the potential of it's just a negative. Like, the filtering system by itself is a negative sort of thing. Well, I would translate it as, like, you know, providing more taxes, it's providing, you know, new and more negative things, which I don't think what the government's really... after at this point in its time, considering recent opinion polls and the likes. But, hey, far from us to judge. That happens in November, if you weren't aware of it. Put it in your diary. You'll be doing it fairly shortly. So, all right, in other interesting news, Google Street View back in the privacy evangelist's sights again.
Good. Yep.
Because there's nothing like a good scandal as the Google car drives up and down your street. And even, like, as we spoke about recently, did you see the Taronga Zoo foot patrol? The little Google man with his little, like, Steadicam thing, his trolley, and he walked around Taronga Park Zoo?
No, I didn't hear about that.
Didn't you? Were you there, Warlock? Did you go to Taronga Park Zoo for the launch?
No, I didn't see that. I did notice recently that in the EU they want Google to announce to everybody whenever they're going into a city so that they know that the cameras are going to be there so people can get off the streets or hide things or whatever.
No. That'll work in the exact complete opposite. People will do things to be photographed, don't you think?
It's already happened. Yeah,
absolutely.
There was a guy who proposed to his girlfriend on the Google View.
Yes. And a few other. I think when Google flew over Sydney, I think they did some low-level reconnaissance for their aerial stuff, and people put all sorts of things on roofs to be photographed when they flew over. But anyway, Google's controversial Street View application, which allows web users to peek up close in cities worldwide, has come under attack again from the privacy campaigners. The software based on photographs, which creates 3D imagery, allowing surfers to walk through streets of New York, Paris, and Hong Kong, already blurs out faces of passers-by or car registration plates. However, in a letter last Friday, a group of privacy campaigners demanded that Google firmly in European Union regulators' sites over a host of issues, publicise the arrival of their photographers, and reduce the time they hold the data, which is exactly what Warlock was saying, which is good. Announce their presence as they drive through the streets of Europe.
They should have come down to Melbourne Zoo and got pictures of the new baby elephant.
Mm. Yes, maybe that didn't. Their little trolley didn't fit through the doors at the zoo, but who knows? What do you think? Are we taking this privacy thing a little bit too far? Like, certainly if you're committing a crime the day the car went past, well, that's your bad luck, isn't it?
What do you mean, no? What are you knowing?
I mean, no, we're not taking this privacy thing too far. I think having people driving around taking photographs of people going about their business is, you know, perhaps...
If you're in a public place...
Hang on, is perhaps what?
Is perhaps a little bit unnecessary.
Have you walked through the streets of Melbourne recently and looked at all the cameras that take
you
off?
Yeah, but they're not published to the internet. They're...
Have you been to the Vic Road site recently? I hate to disillusion you, but yes, they are published on the internet, you know? Yeah, there's all sorts of things. I tried it just the other day. I was...
CityLink's got live cameras up at the CityLink tunnels.
And you can actually see yourself drive through them when you look at them as you go past.
Can you recognise faces and can you read registration numbers on those cameras?
No and yes. No to faces, yes to registration numbers.
On those Vic Roads cameras, you can read registration numbers.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Why does this worry you, Graham? If you're not doing anything wrong, you've got nothing to worry about.
You're drinking lots of coke whilst on the road or something, are you?
Well, yes, but that's just beside the point.
and the police are pulling him over as a consequence.
No, but I mean, people have... you don't have to be doing something wrong to want your privacy. You don't have to be doing something illegal or otherwise objectionable to just want to have it not be publicly known where you were.
Yes. Do you think that's a right, do you?
I think it's something that... It may not be a right, but it's a privilege that we like to think that we can have in this country.
Is it an expectation that people have?
An expectation, yeah.
Can I suggest you get your windows of your car tinted?
Well, yeah, maybe.
Would that alleviate the problem?
No, not entirely.
Okay. Well, then don't go to those places where there's cameras.
Which is everywhere.
Yeah. Mr. Google's walking around all over the place. Yeah. Or he can't get in his car, he's walking around with his Steadicam.
Absolutely. Bring on the little shopping trailer.
You would think with all the security cameras and closed circuit they got in Europe and England that would be the place they would least care about it.
Absolutely. I think in particular the UK, and I think I saw one of our colleagues there on the chat tonight in the UK.
Yeah, Darren UK's
there. Darren UK's there. I thought that the UK was the most security camera conscious in the world. They have more cameras there than anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, I think London has the most number of cameras per head. Yeah.
That's not a problem, is it? Is it
working?
Depends
what they're used for. Depends who can see them.
Well, put it this way. If you were committing a crime, chances are you're going to be captured on some form of camera.
If you're committing a crime and the police are using surveillance cameras to detect that or to prevent it, then that's fine. You shouldn't be committing a crime. But if you're just going about your business and you don't want person A to know that you're seeing person B, then, you know, that's not a crime.
Just don't do it when the Google guy's driving
past.
Well,
that's the thing.
This is the thing. I think Google is
people expect a bit of privacy.
Google's setting out to photograph houses and buildings and streets, like with their Street View program. They're not actively trying to photograph people, but the issue is...
But they are, whether they intend to or not.
Whether they intend to or not, people are getting... And cars and registration numbers and things are being caught up in that program.
Oh, dear. You just have to laugh, really, don't you? It's only going to get worse. There's going to be cameras in cars,
it is. That's the thing, Andrew. It's going to get a lot worse before it gets any better, isn't it?
Because
more and more things these days have got cameras in them.
Now, speaking of...
Dr. Laney, that's a scurrilous accusation, and you'll retract that immediately in the chat room at chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
I'll get them to go there. Well done, Graham. Excellent.
What brought that on?
Yeah. Just another thing with privacy. Twitter wants users to update their personal information. Twitter, of all people, is prodding their users to update their settings to create more ways for people to connect on their communication services. They want to be found. Now, did you log on to Twitter the other day and you get this message pop up about how can people find you? And you had to put in your email address or your name or something like that?
I did. Now, I don't usually log on to Twitter to use Twitter. I use a client, a web-based client called Brizzly, which is at brizzly.com. And I find that Brizzly is a much nicer interface than the default Twitter interface. But as it happens, I did log into twitter.com just for some other reason, and I did get prompted. Make sure that your description is up to date, and make sure your username and other stuff and your website's up to date.
I unchecked all those boxes that they wanted me to check.
Ah, so do not bother me again, please, Twitter.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. But it asks questions like, do you want to be found on your email address? And I said, of course not. I don't want spam bots finding my email address. Because obviously,
I also don't log into the actual Twitter site. I use one called Seismic, which is even better than Brizzly that I used to use.
What does that do that's different to Brizzly?
They integrate images, previews, and video previews, and just makes it really easy to use work. It's got a lovely interface. It looks like something that Steve Jobs would be happy to have on his iPhone, even. It's just done really well.
Okay. So, this is the Twitter request. It pops up. when you log into your account, and it prompts you to do all those sort of things. So it's whether or not you want to do that. To address privacy concerns, Twitter says it won't publicly display email addresses and mobile numbers, even if the service gets permission to use the information as a search tool. Well, once again, companies that are outside the jurisdiction of Australian law, I'd be fairly careful about what you put up there, because after all, if you look at America, for example, it's all opt-out. You're in unless you opt out, whereas over here you're out unless you opt in, and I think that's a much better way to be.
And Google have been very good responding to complaints. If you find yourself in a Street View photograph or some other picture and you write to them and say, hey, get rid of this, I don't want myself up there, then they'll pull it down for you. That's not an issue.
When do you write to them?
Oh, there's on the maps or the Street View site, there is a way that you can report images, whether it's because it's offensive, like we had an odd spot where they had the man sitting on the toilet got photographed, or whether you're in it and you don't want to be in it, you can write to them and they'll remove the image for you.
I'm doing some interviews at Google when I'm there in the States.
Good, good. You can ask them about this.
Going up to Mountain View. Oh, it depends whether I get to ask the right person.
We need to find out about the opt-in versus opt-out mentality, which is very different here versus the United States.
Indeed it is. All right. Oddspot Gadget Website of the Week coming up after this. Google have been taken to court for forgery.
eBay was the truck and then Telstra pulled the license.
I need my fix of current Tech Talk Radio.
There's some suggestions they're all going to have SD card slots in them.
There's a new way of watching television that we're seeing emerge.
I can't give you that information over the phone.
Well, if you don't like it, then don't display the cyber. When I had a merchant account with the Communist Bank, the material that was for what?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. Oh, this thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole.
Andrew, you're going to love this. On the 12th of February, Panasonic said it was allowing customers to reserve orders on its new full HD 3D camcorder.
Oh, yeah.
It's only $21,000, so it could be cheap at half the price.
Cheap. You
grab a couple. The 3D capable camcorder, announced earlier this year at the CES, Consumer Electronics Show, features separate recording for left and right channels and is compatible with SD and SDHC memory cards.
Can you describe what it looks like?
It looks like a camcorder, but it's got
it's a bit like a set of binoculars, isn't it?
It is. It's got like a special lens on the front with two... Well, lenses. It looks like one of those things that Luke Skywalker had when he was panning across the horizon. You know, with those, like, that square, oblongy shaped, like, dual-lensed sort of binocular device.
Yeah, binoculars, they're called.
That's what they're called, binoculars. There's a blog post at camcorderinfo.com. It says it'll be very similar to Panasonic's regular handheld prosumer models, with one key difference, a convergence control to synchronise the lenses for 3D recording. The convergence control will be on the lens near the iris, focus and zoom controls. Mm. There are no official plans for an auto-convergence option or a 3D
viewfinder.
What does
it record on? You said on a card, was it?
SD, digital memory. Expect it to be showcased at NAB, which is 10th to 15th of April.
That's where
you're going. Las Vegas, Nevada, so you'll be able to give us a full report, Andrew. Yeah.
That's bring us home a demo.
Can I suggest people don't adopt this early technology? Just don't go there, okay?
That's our gadget of the week, the Panasonic Full HD 3D camcorder.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
New tab.
New tab. This
new
week's
tab.
Website.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, that's new tab.
www.freecycle, freecycle.org. Thanks, Warlock, for contributing this to the program.
Well done, Warlock.
FreeCycle is...
Not only is he talking to us, he's actually contributing.
He is contributing constructively. FreeCycle is a non-profit movement of people who are giving and getting stuff for free. It's all about reuse and keeping good stuff out of landfills. If you've got something that you're going to chuck out in the nature strip,
like a TV,
FreeCycle. Yeah, someone might want it, or there might be something there which someone's throwing out that you want.
A great idea.
Yeah, each local group is moderated by a local volunteer. Membership's free. You sign up. There's a search box there where you enter your suburb and your state and your country. So I typed in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. It very quickly returned to me the relevant FreeCycle Yahoo group. So have a look at that one. It's a good
little
website.
Was there much on there? Like as in what people were trying to get rid of, or what people were looking for?
There's a lot of good stuff. Well, both. So if you're looking for stuff, Yeah, there's people trying to give stuff away because they can't give it away for free, and there's other stuff which people are looking for.
What about the stuff that you can't bear to give away because it's still working in perfect order, like your old 4x3 television set? There's obviously people out there that might want something like that, I would have thought.
Maybe, if you're one of these people.
Did you find any on FreeCycle?
I didn't look too hard, especially for televisions. I've just thrown some out the Nature Strip. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. I should have gone to this week's website, FreeCycle.org.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
British church leaders are encouraging people to give up their iPods for Lent. Instead of more traditional vices like chocolate, to help save the planet. The Bishop of London, Richard Chartres, and the Bishop of Liverpool, James Jones, are among those calling for a carbon fast for Lent.
Why?
A period ahead of Easter, which Christians traditionally consider a time of penance and reflection, as well as spending a day without using technology such as mobile phones or iPods.
Why?
The 46 daily suggestions also...
Will you answer my question?
No.
Why?
The 46 daily suggestions also include eating by candlelight, cutting meat and vegetables thinner so they cook faster...
Was this, which church is this?
...and flushing the toilet less often.
Oh, dear.
This is the Christian Church. The Church of England.
Church of England.
Yes. Okay. Reuters reported that the Bishop of Liverpool said, instead of giving up chocolate for Lent, why not fast for justice to help those suffering the effects of climate change?
Oh, dear.
There you have it. So
the church has gone
that's why,
green.
That's why. To help those suffering from the effects of climate change, switch off your iPod, switch off your mobile phone for Lent.
All right. Well done. That's your spot. And I believe that is Tech Talk Radio for show number 9 of 2010. You have been listening to on Skype, if he's still there, Warlock. Thank you, Warlock.
Say hello, Warlock.
Not a problem, guys. Great.
All right.
To,
are you going
to
join us next week?
Yes, she'll be on next week.
Okay, there we go. We might even have JD in next week too. You never know your luck in a big radio studio like this. We've got a spare microphone at the moment. Yeah. Also on the panel this evening has been Dr. Ron, who's currently on vacation, as well as Dr. Graham, who's currently in the studio.
He's on a course at the moment.
You are
Dr.
On a course, aren't you?
Yes, I'm having my brain topped up with Exchange 2007.
So. Oh, good. Just what you need. All right, so same time next week, wherever you're listening to us around Australia, around the world, hello to all the Wee Warians. If you're listening to us live up there in New South Wales, it's hello again. And the Cairns people, till next week, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.